Super. Dr. Day, thanks for the invite. It's been, we were conversing before the session started. It's been a few years, but and he was at Ohio State and I was at Mizzou, so we've both moved, and good to see you again. I appreciate the invitation to be here. As Dr. Day indicated, Colorado native, so I've already seen a number of other natives in the audience, and I'm certainly pleased to be here. Maybe one of the most important qualifications for the talk is I grew up on short grass prairie in southern Colorado, and my wife says it's an arid environment. It's a semi-arid environment. I have some real sensitivity and passion towards cow-calf production in this part of the world. And one of the things that I think is really important as we think about that, and certainly appreciate many of Matt's comments on his perspective on not only the use of EPDs and selection index, but the context that we apply those, and really understanding our production system and the breeding objective we have sets the stage for many of the decisions, obviously, that we make, and ultimately our ability to achieve profitability in our production system. And as we think about our production system, there's lots of discussion, obviously, not only in this part of the world, but certainly in Kansas as well, about improved sustainability. And certainly as we think about the role genetics play, both selection for individual traits or index kind of components from a additive genetics perspective, we also need to consider the value and utility of the non-additive genetic effects that we can take advantage of in terms of heterosis or hybrid vigor, because they have a substantial impact potential on profit when we align our system correctly. And so I want to challenge our conventional wisdom, a little like Matt. You know, we can either agree the world is round and we have, you know, GPS satellites going around it and lots of opportunities to circumnavigate the Earth, or that the world is flat, okay? Historically, we've been in the beef production sector very reluctant to change the way we look at the world, okay? And one of those ways we look at the world is the way we select bulls, okay? One of the things that has been sort of historic, and certainly there's size constraints and other issues that have driven us this way, but certainly part of it's maybe not being motivated to think about it another way, and that is that we pick one bull to do everything. Certainly when we interact with small producers, lots of opportunity for them to place significant emphasis on calving ease, because they're using the same bull to breed heifers that they breed cows to. Well, we all know we give up lots of territory in terms of performance and carcass attributes and all kinds of other things when we use only calving ease bulls to mate mature cows, okay? And so one of the things I want us to think about is how do we start to do a better job of making individual breed or sire selection decisions to target specific parts of our business, okay? And those two parts of our business, we can divide it up into thinking about picking bulls to build replacement females. They're going to be the engine in our cow herd over time. And how do we select those bulls to make females that are the most environmentally adapted, best cows that we can make, okay? And we know the sets of traits that make those cows successful, in many cases, are quite different than the ones that the marketplace may desire in the calf product that we sell, okay? So what I'm advocating to you is that we really start thinking about separating our maternal and terminal mating decisions, okay? Get away from the idea that one bull can do everything for us, because I think for many of us, one of the common complaints I hear from producers is, man, it's getting really tough to find bulls that do everything I want in terms of making cows, and everything I want in terms of making calves that fit in the marketplace and that are desirable downstream in the value chain, okay? And so when we make this one bull does it all sort of concession, we give up lots of things in terms of certainly our ability to think about retained heterosis and a planned crossbreeding system, breed complementarity, what selection tools become important, how do we balance those in our trait decisions. And certainly we fight all the antagonisms, particularly between growth and performance that our feed yard and carcass endpoints desire, and ultimately the cow size and maintenance requirement that we face in terms of our cow-calf unit. Okay, what I want to advocate to you is that we actually separate these two decisions, okay? And this becomes fundamental in a component of our decision-making as we think not only about sire selection, but certainly breeding system and crossbreeding program design. So here we have a sort of two pictures of using different kinds of bulls to build replacement females. The top right picture of a cow-calf pairs to emphasize I want to make those cows as good and environmentally adapted in terms of forage harvesters as I can possibly make, so their maintenance requirement and production requirement fits in a largely grazed-based nutrient environment. Okay, so not much supplemental feedstuffs because we know that has large costs associated with it. Then subsequently, I want to mate those cows to bulls that fit my marketing endpoint for the calves. Okay, so that's the terminal part of the mating decision. How many of you are familiar with the way pork and poultry works as a breeding system? Okay, do they use one boar or one rooster for the whole deal? No, they use different kinds, and they're strategically placed into those breeding schemes because of the traits that they augment or enhance in terms of the production capability of either the sows, okay, so making sows or hens that fit that production environment as best they can, and use the sire decision to produce terminal offspring to fit the marketplace. Okay, a very powerful strategy and one that I think is long overdue in our system. Okay, ultimately, the separation of decision-making enables us to be more flexible, not only in the breeding systems that we design and implement, but most certainly the individual animals that we select. I can't overemphasize Matt's point about the appropriate use of the right endpoint in our selection decision, okay? The old adage is, you get what you sow, okay? And that's true in beef cattle genetics as well. If we put in a selection system that focuses only on terminal traits, we use terminal selection indexes to build cows, guess what we get? We get cows that have lots of terminal traits and no maternal traits, okay? Because the terminal selection indexes have zeros for the economic weights of those maternal traits, okay? So it's important to make sure that we align those traits. So if maternal traits are important to you, select on maternal traits. If you're thinking about building a set of replacement females, and I know many of you are thinking about expansion as we move through this part of the cattle cycle, think about which bulls are new in your bull battery are going to make daughters that are going to work best in your cow herd. Okay. Ultimately, we have to align the traits that we use in selection with our marketing endpoints and our breeding objective. So if we're building replacement heifers, use bulls. If we're building replacement heifers, use bulls that'll make good replacement heifers, okay? Be strategic in how you set that up. One of the other pieces of sort of conventional wisdom, and I'll concede that you know, many times we get stuck in this mentality of when we make selection decisions, we're stuck within a certain set of traits or using EPDs or selection index. The reality is that the use of crossbreeding and heterosis and the value it contributes and using selection index and individual animal improvement within breed, those are not mutually exclusive events. We can have both of those. We can make substantial gains in both of those categories, but we have to be very strategic and thoughtful about how we put our breeding system together and what traits become of emphasis in our selection system. To that end, I really advocate as we step back and think about our mating decisions, you know, over the next 4 or 5 months, many of you will buy bulls. And we have a tendency when the sale catalog arrives to get very engrossed and ingrained in figuring out which animal in that catalog is the one we should buy. Okay? That's actually step number two in the process. Okay? Step number one that many of us sort of overlook on an annual basis is evaluating our breeding system and our breeding objective. What it is that we need to do in our system to improve and enhance profitability. And to that end, thinking about how we've implemented our planned crossbreeding system, maybe what tweaks we need to make in that, what considerations and constraints we have in that system, how might we optimize it to make better use of maternal heterosis in our cows and to build market targeted calves then with ultimate sire selection downstream. Just as a quick reminder here, the power of crossbreeding comes from two primary areas. One of them, obviously, is the value of heterosis or the superiority of the crossbred animal over the average of the purebred parents. Okay, two important things. Okay, it's a little extra boost in performance from crossing two breeds, so not available within breed. And it also says better than the average of the two parent breeds. Okay, so if we think about it, for some traits, the crossbred may actually be inferior to one of the purebred parents. Okay, That's sometimes true, particularly in traits with moderate to high herd abilities, okay, where we've got large breed differences that exist in the population. But for traits with typically lower heritability, where there's less breed difference, those crossbred animals typically are superior to either of the purebred parents. Okay. The other piece in heterosis that we really need to focus on and is the easiest piece to lose, and I'll show you in a minute, is the most economically important, is the value of maternal heterosis. How do we retain heterosis in our cows? How do we build a breeding system to focus on producing those replacement females year in and year out that have an optimization of not only breed inputs, but certainly maternal heterosis? The second part to think about that then is breed complementarity. So putting breeds together that make sense. We can obviously get high levels of heterosis by sort of indiscriminately putting breeds together. Okay? Does that get you where you want to go? No. Okay? It's the combination of appropriate breed choice and breed implementation to not only the maternal environment, but the terminal environment. So what breed combinations you need in those two spaces. But then putting them together to generate heterosis. Okay? If we think about sort of improvement in our production system, we have this sort of space for genetic improvement using either EPDs, selection index, or non-additive effects of heterosis. And it's important to remember that these sort of things are a little bit inversely related. If we think about from a heritability standpoint, traits like reproduction have low heritability, production or growth traits kind of moderate, carcass relatively high heritabilities. If we think about the impact of heterosis, it's the opposite of that. So we get the greatest improvement in lowly heritable traits by heterosis, and for high heritability traits, marginal improvement due to heterosis. Okay? So if we think about what's one of the most important traits, Matt showed it on one of his slides, and I actually had the same slide in it. I nuked it out. One of the best ways to improve performance from an economic standpoint in a cow-calf operation at the system level is improve reproductive rate, right? We know if we don't get a live calf on the ground, all bets are off, right? The value of them in the marketplace, is zero, okay? So improving reproduction is one of the best ways to improve profitability at the system level, and that's where we get some of the most substantial improvement from heterosis, okay? So what are those benefits? You all have seen these slides 1,000 times, okay? But it's to emphasize where the value comes from, okay? This is data from summarized by Jenkins and others from the Meat Animal Research Center. The plot on the on your right, if you start in the left-hand column, we'll think about straight breds. That's base in this decision. Okay, if we have straight bred cows and mate them to a second breed of bull, we produce crossbred calves out of straight bred cows. We see about an 8% improvement in weaning weight per cow exposed. Okay, so system level production efficiency measurement is important to consider here, and that's weaning weight per cow exposed because it captures the improvements in fertility, calf survival, so on and so forth through the chain, not only the growth performance of the calves. The very right-hand column then represents a sort of a terminal sire F1 system. So I've got maximal heterosis in the cow side and maximum individual heterosis in the calf that's produced because it's from a third breed bull. In that system, the green bar then represents the improvement in that production efficiency due to having crossbred cows, okay? And you'll see there the low estimates in the literature suggest about a 23% improvement in weaning weight per cow exposed, okay? So that's resources relatively constant, 23% more output, okay? What should happen to profit? Revenue's got to go up, right? We got more output, okay? Costs relatively the same, profit gets bigger. It not only gets bigger because we've got more marketable product, think about replacement rates in your cow herd. If I have 7 or 8% improved reproductive rate, okay, that means I need 7 or 8% fewer replacement heifers. Okay, if you have 100 cows, let's say we picked 9 because we knew one of these replacement heifers wasn't going to pan out. Okay, what do those 9 heifers cost this year to build? It's between $2,000 and $3,000, depending on your system, okay? So 9 of those is somewhere between $18,000 and $27,000, Okay? What if you just forego producing those? Okay? Where does that value go? Directly to the bottom line of your operation. Okay? So just small changes in reproductive rate have substantial impacts on profit. There's lots of different systems we can deploy, and for those of you that came hoping to get the magic bullet of what crossbreeding system to use, you're going to be sorely disappointed in me, okay? Because the reality is every one of your systems is different, every one of your resource bases is different, and so the application and selection of the right crossbreeding system is very dependent on your operation, and Matt and I do, I don't know, in our career, probably hundreds of talks on crossbreeding systems. We're glad to chat with you this evening, particularly about some strategies that might be appropriate for your operation. But I want to emphasize one of the key things, and that is figure out the system that's the simplest to deploy, because all the failures in crossbreeding systems are typically because of induced complexity and your inability as a manager to maintain that or manage that complexity. Okay? That's not saying bad things about management. It's the reality of day-to-day life on a ranch, okay? And so making sure the system is as simple as possible will help ensure long-term success, okay? And what we see, though, is depending on what system you pick, you have different expectations and level of both retained heterosis in your cows and the subsequent impact on improved production efficiency, okay? One of the common questions that Matt and I both get is, we've seen pretty dramatic changes in the additive genetic merit of breeds over time. Okay, if we go back and look at, and I'll show you a plot here in just a minute for yearling weight, but basically across all the traits that have been under selection in the major beef breeds in the U.S. over the last 30 years, pretty dramatic change in genetic potential. Okay, one of the questions then is, as we've made that change, how has that affected both our ability to generate and capture heterosis, but also leverage breed complementarity? Okay, so two really important questions. Here's some data summarized out of the BIF proceedings by Larry Keene and others from 2012. And basically, it's the crossbreed adjusted genetic trends for seven major U.S. beef breeds over time. Okay, what do we see? Well, first thing you notice is all the lines go which way? Up. Okay, they go up at slightly different rates, but they all go up. And the fact that they go up at different rates means over time, if we rank them in terms of genetic potential, those ranks have changed. Their ability to have different levels of complementarity, if we think about yearling weight as maybe a proxy for mature weight, for example, our assumptions about the size or performance of animals is different today, or should be different today, than it was in 1980, okay? Because the breed averages has changed dramatically. Okay? And so what we used to think about in terms of what breed combinations may make great sense in terms of the maternal side of our system may have changed somewhat, okay? And certainly if we put a plot up here for milk EPD, you see dramatic changes in rank of breeds for milk EPD as well, which means maybe we should think about applying those breeds differently in our production system to minimize maintenance requirement due to lactation, okay? Here's just an illustration. This happens to be Angus and Simmental over time. And if we go back into the mid-1970s in terms of genetic potential, about 60 pounds difference in yearling weight growth potential on average in those two breeds. Today, that's basically zero. Okay? Does that change complementarity for those breeds, how we put them together? Potentially. Okay? Depending on what our goals are. Okay? The reality, though, is that even though we've changed breed and breed potential a lot, okay, in terms of making them more similar in terms of growth performance, and you'll see in a second in terms of mature weight of cows, one of Matt Spangler's recent graduate students did some work re-estimating heterosis effects. And these are British by British, British by continental, or continental by continental crosses. And we see at least as big of heterosis estimates in that data as we did from data produced in the 1970s and 80s, okay? And in some cases, the estimates have gotten bigger, okay? Part of that bigness might be more data, but certainly heterosis is alive and well and available for capture by you in the audience, okay? Here's a summary of data from the Meat Animal Research Center. This is mature cow weights from different breed of sire groups from cycle one and two, which were the initial GPE project and GPU work at the Meat Animal Research Center. Those are the red bars. Okay. And so if we start on the very left, that's Hereford Angus or Angus Hereford crosses, Red Angus, Simmental, Guelphy Limousine, and Charlet. The red bars represent the 70s sort of genetics. Cycle 7 would be the 90s and early 2000s data. What do we notice? One, they all got bigger, right? That's not a surprise to anybody. All of them got about 300 or 400 pounds bigger. But we notice now that most of the mature cow weights across breeds are fairly similar. And in fact, some of the breeds that we would think would be smaller mature weights, so the Hereford Angus, Red Angus, are just as big as some of the continental breeds, if not bigger. Okay, so we have to be very cognizant of the reality of genetics today are a lot different than they were in 1982. Okay, if we're stuck in 1982, we need to figure out how to get our information updated about what our perceptions are on breeds. And there's certainly lots and lots of data out there. And Matt presented a number of good resources to go to. So what advice do I have for you then in terms of how do you leverage breed complementarity? Okay, breed complementarity is putting breeds together that fill the gaps in each other. Okay, so this sort of smart combination of breeds and attributes. One of the things you want to do is harvest the core strengths of those breeds. Okay, because when you go out in the marketplace, Matt's comment about bull purchase cost was an excellent one. Okay, if I say you are in a production system and you retain ownership clear to the rail and you sell cattle in June, July, or August against a high grade base and you want to sell them on a premium grid, what would be one trait that would be really important for you to have in your fed cattle? Starts with an M. Marbling, okay? What breeds excel at marbling? This isn't hard, okay? Starts with an A, they're black. St. Joe's the headquarters of Angus, right? It's easy, okay? Don't pick breeds to bring traits to the table that they're not known for, okay? If you do that, what happens? You're going to have a hard time doing it, first. Two, if I go into a breed that maybe isn't known for marbling and I try and pick a bull that's a trait leader for marbling as a yearling, what happens? Get out the checkbook, right? Because he's probably being competed for by seed stock breeders in that breed as a way to improve genetic potential in that breed. Okay? So be practical in terms of your implementation of what it is you expect the breed to bring to the table and keep it very simple, right? Some of these sort of gut check things we know about what breeds have and bring to the table validate but are largely true. Okay? Obviously, we need to think about sort of adaptation or fitness traits in terms of cow size, lactation potential, fit our production environment. So making sure we pick the right breeds to go into the cow side and the right breeds or breed types to go into the terminal side make a big difference in the effectiveness of that system. Okay, our goal then is the only thing we want to maximize in our cow-calf production system is profit, right? That's the only thing to maximize. Everything else is an optimization exercise, okay, in terms of controlling not only costs, but certainly trying to enhance revenues, but think about optimization and balancing not only optimization of traits, but being realistic in optimizing the amount of heterosis you might be able to generate and capture, okay? Sometimes going for 100% of something is very difficult and expensive to do. When going for half of it may not generate quite as much result, but may be very easy to do. So think maybe use of hybrid or composite bulls versus trying to manage a complicated system using purebreds. Okay, certainly at the end of the day, never forget about this concept of trying to match your cows as best you can to your production environment to minimize feed costs, and then target sire selection to add those traits that make calves desirable in the marketplace. Okay, real quickly. Am I doing five? Five. Okay, excellent. We're making headway. Breed combinations that make sense. This is a slide that's been around for a long time. I didn't come up with it. I don't remember. I've lost track of where I stole this from. But I think it makes a lot of sense because it speaks to balance. Okay. Balance in terms of breed inputs and strategizing about where we put breeds and how we leverage the heterosis they generate. Okay. Certainly, if you're in an environment where you can support more growth and performance, including continental on the cow side, can make some sense to leverage heterosis in those animals. Think about, though, what you want the breed combinations to be in the calf product. Okay, because sometimes the order of operation makes all the difference. In the bottom example there, if we're going to sell calves on a value-based grid, and we can think about having a percentage of continental in those animals, there's lots of ways to make three-quarter British, quarter continental calves. Okay, well, there's two principally. Okay, F1 British continental cows, top cross back to a British bull. Okay, that produces three-quarter quarter. Or British-based cows mated to a F1 British continental bull, okay? Which one of those has more value? I'll be precise in the question. Which one has more value from the cow side? The one that's got the crossbred cows, right? Remember, two-thirds of the economic value of crossbreeding comes from crossbred cows. So sometimes just making the change in the order of operations can have a big impact on the success of your system. I want us to think real quickly about opportunities, okay? Opportunities from the marketplace should help inform and structure our mating decisions, okay? This is some data that I put together last night, and I didn't get it cleaned up quite as much. This is weekly average prices, and so there's some chop around it. The red line represents choice select spread through the year. This is 2010 through 2014 average price, choice select spread. The blue line is Kansas dressed steer price, okay? What do you notice about weeks 9, 10, 11, and 12? Choice select spread is narrow. Okay, if you're selling fed cattle into that market, which is a seasonal price high, is marbling near as important to you there as it is in November when choice select spread's wide? No. So you can think about, how do I balance the traits that I put into those genetics based on my marketing endpoint? Okay, important. Here's the similar slide. Red line still choice select spread. The blue line is the percent of the mix grading choice and higher. Okay, think about what your marketing objective is. Work backwards from that. Okay, how do you choose a breeding program? One of the things that becomes very important in this discussion is: are you going to be premium focused, or are you going to be profit focused? Okay, kind of goes back to the previous two slides. Figuring out where it is that you want to make money and going after that in the most effective way you can. Obviously, there are lots of constraints to thinking about breeding system design. It's one of the more complicated, it's kind of the $500 an hour work that you ought to do in your operation to understand where profit's generated in your system and how do you use heterosis and sire selection to emphasize that. Certainly limitations in terms of herd size, which system might be appropriate, right? If you've got 50 cows, your ability to generate and manage heterosis from a three-breed rotational crossbreeding system is probably pretty limited, okay? If you've got 3,000 cows and they're in 1,000-cow units, a three-breed rotational system may make perfect sense, okay? Depends on size and implementation and how your system is set up, okay? Other things to think about: how do you generate replacement heifers? How do you market calves? Constraints in terms of environment and management should be near top of the list. Again, mating system goals, and we'll stop here. How do we optimize the utilization of both calf and maternal heterosis, remembering two-thirds of the economic value of crossbreeding comes from crossbred cows, okay? And my current numbers, if you do the math, an F1 terminal sire system, the heterosis generated in that's worth north of $200 per cow per year, okay? $200 per cow per year, okay? Before you trade that off in figuring out how much can I get a $3 premium in the marketplace for X kind of calves, or try and capture grid premiums when you sell calves at weaning time, think about the trade-offs, okay? How do you utilize breed complementarity to match cows to their production environment, progeny to the marketplace? That's a recurring theme in this talk, I know, but it's one that's important to sort of appropriate implementation of these ideas. Things to think about: how do you minimize variation in phenotype of the calves that you sell, okay? Certainly sire selection, coat color, conformation, all those things play a role. But if you're big, there's another magical tool that you have available at your disposal. What is it? sorting, right? Putting load lots together that match, okay? One of the last things, and I see Dr. Johnson's here, Sandy. Glad you made it from Western Kansas. It was Western yesterday out there. Think about how you might use advanced reproductive technologies like AI, fixed time AI, gender sorted semen to actually implement the crossbreeding system to build the replacement females. Okay, in any of these sort of discussions, building the replacement female is the complicated part of the system. And in many cases, if we think about building highly maternal sort of replacement females, the drag in the system becomes the steer mates to those heifers. Okay, so using maybe gender-sorted semen might provide an opportunity to minimize the production of those steer mates and devote more cows in your breeding system over to sort of the terminal side of the production chain. John Hall at University of Idaho has done a lot of nice simulation and production work using those kinds of concepts, and certainly a place to go in the literature. So with that, I'm going to stop. I'm certainly glad to be here. I notice as the morning goes on, the crowd gets bigger and bigger. That's fantastic. And I'll be here this evening for the bullpen session. Look forward to interacting with many of you throughout the day. Thank you again.